Welcome to the Mothman in the Bible Belt podcast with your host, Buck Fantastic.
Girl Scout cookies.
When people think of West Virginia agriculture, many think hay, corn, cattle, and chickens. Those are the big crops and livestock grown and raised in the Mountain State. Mushrooms are a niche crop in West Virginia. Few people grow them commercially. Earnshaw Farms owner George Patterson is trying to change that. Patterson started his mushroom enterprise on a former strip mine in Earnshaw in 2018. Patterson grows around 20 varieties of gourmet mushrooms that are shipped all across the country, primarily to restaurants in West Virginia. You can also purchase his mushrooms online and occasionally at the Capital Market in Charleston. On this episode of the Mothman and the Bible Belt podcast, George Patterson talks mushrooms, growing his business, and gives his opinion on whether or not the West Virginia legislature should decriminalize magic mushrooms in the state. Patterson also chimes in on medical cannabis startup requirements. Join me, your host, Buck Fantastic, for another exciting episode of the Mothman and the Bible Belt podcast. It's fungi-tastic. So, George, you're a Charleston, West Virginia native, right?
I am indeed.
What got you into mushroom farming?
Well, I honestly was looking for solutions for things to do on mine sites. And I found one, but now I'm in a tunnel, on an old highway tunnel, so we come a long way from there. So that was a pretty huge move. The move was incredibly stressful. So we moved from the mine site into the tunnel. The guard offered us that opportunity, and I'd always wanted to actually pump air out of a mine somewhere into a warehouse or something, you know. And I thought, well, why not just move into an underground tunnel? Luckily, there's a mine right there next to the tunnel, because, you know, West Virginia, a mine's about a stone's throw away if you got a good arm. And luckily, we're going to try to start doing some more experiments there. So we're trying to keep up doing our work in reclamation, and then with some other special projects that we're doing too. So
this is the Memorial Tunnel that's near Pink Creek?
Yeah, it's the old highway tunnel. The National Guard was previously using it for training purposes. And now we're luckily able to take advantage of its geothermal properties to really output and crank out some mushrooms. So, you know, we're really only one of three, I think, in the world total that I can find mushroom tunnels. So it's a really, really cool opportunity. And I think it's a huge thing for West Virginia. And I'm hoping that it'll be a huge, you know, boon to the local economy. So I'm hoping that we can really create a lot of jobs and you know, do our best to get a lot of local mushrooms and a lot of local places and across, you know, the Appalachian region. I mean, and already the country. So we're really grateful for that opportunity to be in there, to be able to do that.
So since you moved from Earnshaw, are you going to change the name of your business?
That's what I've been wrangling with is so much. You know, honestly, I mean, Earnshaw is where it started, you know, and people already know that name. And I got a lot of t-shirts and stickers printed out, you know? So, you know, it's a big expense to change. Honestly, I mean, I find it hard to leave the name Earnshaw just because we've sort of developed under that brand. I mean, you know, and I think that the people of Earnshaw would are proud of us, you know? So I think that they would let us use that name.
Are you the only commercial grower in the area?
There are a couple other commercial growers out there in the state. I do think that we are possibly the largest. We produce a fair amount of mushrooms, anything from shiitake to lion's mane. We have weekly customers, local customers, and then we also have a really large internet following where we ship orders off all over the country every month. So that's a big part of our business. But yeah, in terms of in the area, there's a couple other farmers. A lot of them are my friends. Julie Scher with WVSU. She's got some mushroom logs growing in her backyard, you know. So there's all sorts of people out there growing mushrooms.
Yeah, I saw that you have mushrooms in local restaurants like 1010 Bridge Restaurant, Coco's Kitchen and Cafe, the Venetian Estate, Ichiban Pan Asian Cuisine. Are there any plans of setting up a stationary storefront anytime soon?
You know, honestly, yeah. So I really want to put a storefront in at the tunnel. There's this really cool room with a lot of windows, and it's essentially, I think, where the Turnpike used to maybe have offices or something. I guess so they would watch over the cars. I don't know. It's a beautiful room, but it's, you know, and it's really a historic spot. I think a lot of people would love to come and visit. So we're really working to try to get that done. So right now it's just an empty storefront. So, you know, I have a long way to go, but we hope to feature a lot of local products there, and sort of have it as part of an on-farm store. So that's sort of next, you know, kind of similar to what our friends in Malden have at JQ Dickinson Saltworks, one of our really big customers and longtime supporters. And we'd love to feature their products and similar products as well. So,
how did you go about raising the capital for Hernshaw Farms?
The capital for Hernshaw Farms? Yeah. My parents helped tremendously.
That's a plus.
So, you know, they really invested in me. Yeah, they really did. So I'm grateful for that opportunity. But we started with one shipping container, you know, and we started with cash flow running. So the shipping containers were actually pretty cheap then. Now they're really expensive. But we went from, you know, producing in one container to then be able to use the, you know, to another container to the next. So we started with by getting blocks from Pennsylvania before we made them ourselves to kind of get the cash flow going and to test the market. I wanted to see, you know, will people really buy these crazy mushrooms in Charleston, West Virginia? And honestly, the overwhelming answer seemed to be no at the time. Hands down, it really was a no. I got rejected so many times. Now, you know, it's as we're sort of established, I have people calling me, which is crazy, you know, to go from that to that. So we're really lucky to be in that position. And it's because of a lot of hard work from a lot of different people over a number of years, you know. So I've had good teams, and we kind of try to nurture and mentor and be a place for growth for a person. You know, I think that's the way to kind of run a company culture. And that's a lot of what we're doing.
You got technical assistance from West Virginia State University Extension Service, right?
I love WVSU. There was a guy called Mike Easter, and I called around to all the colleges to try to figure out basically, you know, what do I do? And Mike Easter was the one that gave me the idea to, you know, sort of hit the ground running with getting blocks from Pennsylvania to test it out. And then we learned how to make the blocks ourselves, you know, eventually. And Mike was really pivotal and helpful in his advice, and he's still a long-term friend. So, and everybody at WVSU since has been absolutely incredible.
What was the startup cost for getting Hernshaw Farms up and running? Was it modest compared, since you're a small ag business?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as bad as you'd think. I mean, compared to my education, it was way less, you know. But the growth aspect was great. At the time, you know, shipping containers were relatively affordable, and it was easy and cost effective to scale the business on cash flow, you know. So the way that we did that was was really, really good. So, and that's sort of what we're still doing. We're expanding, bootstrapping the tunnel project. So we're using our own cash flow to grow. And I think that's really good, because sometimes, you know, if you try to grow a business too fast, I've done it because I've tried to grow this business too fast. Like, it could go wrong. So, you know, doing things slowly, taking your time, making the right decision, that's really key to the success.
Did you pursue any USDA grants or cost share programs?
I think I did get a pandemic USDA something. That one was good. Honestly, I've tried to mainly do most of it through cash flow, but I do know that those are great programs, and they're really, if anyone's looking to get started in a business, is something to look at.
You mentioned a few of the mushrooms, but you grow nearly 20 varieties, correct?
I think so. honestly, I had to, we're redesigning our survey system, and I had to count them all. And that was something. There are quite a few.
What's your most popular?
Lion's mane seems to be the thing. It's really, really good for you. Tastes great, mild, and it helps your brain function. So it's really, really popular.
What's the easiest mushroom variety to grow?
The easiest is oyster. If you're looking to start and you're trying to get into mushroom growing, I think oyster is a great place to start.
I saw on the internet a recipe when I was Googling mushroom dishes. People who make traditional chitlins, they substitute the pig innards for oyster mushrooms. Have you ever tried those?
Nice.
Yeah.
I have not tried those. I need to give it a try. Let's get some pig chitlins. I like some mushroom chitlins. It sounds
good.
We need to get together and make sons. There we go. That would be a good time.
Healthy.
Be a good time.
Talk about healthy.
Healthy, you can't go wrong with some vegan chitlins.
Yeah. What sets your mushrooms apart from the store-bought variety?
Well, they don't. You really can't find them in the stores. The only variety that we grow that you can find in Kroger is the shiitake mushroom, and the lion's mane mushroom, the pepino mushroom, the chestnut mushroom, the pink oyster mushroom, blue oyster mushroom, gold oyster mushroom, reishi mushroom. Man, did I say pepino? Namco beach. These are some of the different varieties we grow. There's so many, but you can't find those in the grocery store. So, you know, that's really a difference. I mean, they're gourmet and they're delicious and they have different texture. You know, they're like nothing you've had really before, unless you've had them.
I bought some of your oysters a few years ago. I thought it would be easy to prepare them. I usually take traditional button mushrooms, chop them up, mix them together with rice and seasoning and microwave them. I tried the oyster variety and they didn't get all mushy and gushy. What's the best way to prepare these specialty mushrooms? Obviously, microwave has its drawbacks.
Yeah, don't microwave them. It does. Man, just get a skillet out and get some garlic. I get a little bit of olive oil and then some salt and some pepper. Hey, give them a little fry. That's all you got to do. You can put some soy sauce in there, maybe some teriyaki, you know, a little bit of that. But really, that's all you need. Just keep it simple.
What is your favorite mushroom dish?
You know, honestly, I had mushrooms at and onions at DT Prime the other day, and it was delicious. I took them on that stone that they have there. And I cooked them in this sauce that I have no idea what sauce it is, but Dave has this amazing sauce. It's the Wonder Sauce, Dave's sauce. And you cook them in there a little bit, and man, they were absolutely delicious. So picking one dish is hard. And also, it kind of changes for me, you know, from time to time. I really like fried rice. I love to cook fried rice. I had a friend in high school that was from China that cooked fried rice. And the way he did it was so very interesting. And it's delicious. So, you know, you put a little oil on the pan. You always use day old or older rice, you know, and the idea is fried rice is traditionally something that they use for leftovers. So it's not, you know, it's whatever you got in the fridge. So if you've got some mushrooms in the fridge, that's great. Saute them up in a little bit of olive oil and some soy sauce and put them in with the fried rice. You take a little, you know, oil on the pan, then you take the fried rice, then you take the eggs, then you take the peppers, right? You cook the peppers separately first, of course, and you put all these ingredients in. It's kind of a hodgepodge, and it ends up usually being wonderful. Just make sure to use a little bit of teriyaki sauce, and also cook the eggs separately. So
I try, but it just never turns out the way. It always gets too oily and soggy. But now I know that I should let my rice sit for a day, and maybe hopefully, or a day or two, maybe it will not be so mushy, gushy, and clumpy.
Yeah, the reason so it sticks to the pan if it's fresh rice, and then you're left with this like weird residue. But older rice is, you know, it has this way of pulling off the pan, so you can cook with it way easier. So that's, you know, really, really vital to making fried rice. And then also just using what you have, you know, it doesn't have to be anything special.
What's the ideal growing conditions for mushrooms?
Well, the tunnel's great. You know, you just need humidity and you need a little bit of light and then warmth, temperature or cooling, air conditioning. The tunnel's nice because it has a stable temperature all year round because it's underground. So it's natural geothermal temperature. And it's already pretty humid in there. And the blocks kind of produce their own heat. So while it's 55 degrees, it needs to be a little bit warmer. But inside the containers, they generate a little bit more heat and they're able to produce, which is really a beautiful thing. So it's entirely natural, but you'll have to control CO2 and you have to control humidity. So you have to make sure that the humidity stays at a certain percentage at all time. And the tunnel, for the most part, stays at that constant humidity. So does the temperature. So it's stable. And the box, and using the, we just took the Connex boxes we were using on the mines and put them in the tunnel. So they generate their own heat through the blocks, right? And the heat kind of controls them. So
you're talking about high humidity itself. Or low humidity?
High humidity for fruiting mushrooms. The humidity has to be higher at the pinning stage, and then at the fruiting stage, it has to be around, you know, at 90%, but you know, you kind of aim for 95% to get them to pin. So the pins need oxygen and humidity to initiate, so to trigger the sawdust blocks that we fill with grain spawn and seal and let colonize for, you know, for, depending on the species, 22 to 65 days, or depending on the amount of spawn use, you can get them to do it a lot quicker. So they colonize and they sit in a warmer space, and then they go to the fruiting area where they are exposed to high humidity and oxygen. When the way they're exposed to oxygen is by slicing the bag. So the oxygen exposure then triggers pins, and then you have fruiting bodies.
Have you tried cultivating molly mushers?
Not yet. The Chinese are way ahead on that. They started cultivating in 2014, and they've been doubling in size pretty much ever since. Then you look at the Danish morel project, where they have successfully cultivated morels indoors, and they say they can do it actually at the cost to produce a white button mushroom. And then you look at the Chinese project, and it seems like they're using some sort of symbiotic growth where they're growing the molly moochers together with these plants. Anyways, they haven't shared their secrets with me yet, but I've been trying to watch all the videos to see what I can learn, you know. When I do, I guess I'll, if I figure out how to grow them, I'll retire.
It's a popular species in West Virginia.
That was a pretty good feat. Yeah, it is. I mean, they occur here naturally, and they're really good. They're tasty.
Do you use soil from the local area, or do you like have it shipped in from out of state, or for use in the mushrooms?
We get our soybean haul from Ohio, which is pretty close, you know. But we pick it up in West Virginia at Yager's Farm Supply, and they get our wood fuel pellets from there, and I think they get their wood fuel pellets from Kingwood, West Virginia. So that's we use Master's Mix, and that's our main substrate. We're looking at using other soils here soon, maybe, trying to test some other things out to see what we can do.
You've gone from selling mushrooms to selling honey, olive oil, mushroom kits, lavender body cream, mushroom seasoning. What new products do you have coming our way next? Anything you can pitch?
Next, we're we're looking at reintroducing our mushroom tinctures. We've been out of stock for those for a while, so we're hoping to reinvigorate that. Really, the pin pot is the new thing I've been trying to promote, but you know, I've honestly, we've developed so many products, it's crazy. It's hard to keep up with. So everything's made in house, but you know, it's pretty cool. So it's all our own pretty unique product line, and we love featuring other local artisans that really go well with mushrooms. What's better with mushrooms than Trapano olive oil? You know, you get a bag of dried mushrooms, rehydrate them, and then fry them in some Trapano olive oil, and everything's okay. So,
now is that grown in the state?
Life's pretty good.
Is the olive oil grown? Well, is the olives? They don't grow in West Virginia, do they?
No, their olive oil is from Italy, but Leah Trapano's family has a vineyard there, and she's local. Yeah, so you know, it's really, really good. And then we also sell our mushroom salt combination. So we have local JQ Dickinson salt, and then we have our mushrooms. So that's an absolute local collaboration. So that we're really, really excited about. And then we have some awesome local maple syrup on there. So you know. Yeah, all sorts of local products on our website.
Does mushroom growing require a lot of manpower?
A lot of manpower.
When you're doing it on a commercial scale.
Depends on how many hours you want to work in the day. I don't know. Yeah, it does require a lot of manpower. And we're trying to scale up and create more jobs. So, you know, that's the hope that it becomes a contributor, an economic contributor to the local area.
Were you all close to that where that spill occurred around Paint Creek a few weeks ago, where that apple the methylene?
Yeah, we didn't use water that day, luckily. That was that's the cool thing about the tunnel. The tunnel has a natural humidity, you know, from the rain soaking in. Mm-hmm. So you know, we don't actually have to water the mushrooms every day, and they're fine. It's really, really cool. Actually, I got a complaint from a chef that Chef Paul complained that they were too wet, and I was like, man, yeah, it's because we're watering them so much. You know, they're already exposed to the natural humidity. But yeah, the mushrooms actually, I think, could have cleaned up that spill. Amines are, you know, naturally absorbed by mushrooms. Some mushroom compost would have been great. I just don't. I didn't know quite who to call, you know, but the spent blocks would be great at absorbing that sort of thing. Yeah, but luckily it didn't affect us. Thank goodness. I was so worried, but I got the notification on my phone before we went into work. So, you know, all's well.
How does an agriculture operation like yours protect consumers from environmental polluters like that? Should something go wrong, how do you keep bad things from contaminating your product?
That's a good question. Yeah, that's a good question. We test a lot, you know. So we test the water. You know, that's the way to do that. But I really wish that, you know, we use mushrooms for more environmental problems, and we're working on that. So, you know, I hope that we can do that.
Yeah, you hear about using mushrooms for heavy metal remediation. That's what I was told, that they were using it on like mine sites to help soak up some of the heavy metal.
Which they absorb heavy metals. No, it's cool. They're doing it in Colorado, I think, and then they're doing it in Oklahoma. It's really neat. So
our neighbors to the north, Pennsylvania, are the largest mushroom producer in the country, producing around half the mushrooms our country consumes. Do you think West Virginia could possibly top Pennsylvania in years to come, mushroom-wise?
Oh, yeah. We're going to do it, man. Watch out. I think that we could really contribute, you know, to the local economy by bringing the mushroom industry here. And that's what we hope to do, is be a part of that.
Oregon and California decriminalize psilocybin mushrooms for mental health treatment, and several other U.S. cities have decriminalized the magic mushroom as well. Do you think West Virginia should be on the list to decriminalize next?
I think that's really up to the voters to decide, you know, and the politicians to decide. But I do think that there are some really great studies that people should be paying attention to that point to the beneficial uses of mushrooms of all kinds, even the ones that we sell, like reishi mushrooms, that are, you know, good for arthritis, and you know, things like that. Lion's mane, that's good for your brain. You know, there are some great natural benefits to mushrooms that people really should experience. And I think that, you know, and with the right oversight and the right doctors, I think there's a lot to be accomplished. And I think they're doing some great work at places like Johns Hopkins and in California, you know, where they're doing that sort of thing, you know, where they're experimenting and seeing where mushrooms can benefit society.
They help people with severe mental health issues. That's a positive compared to all the drugs you see on the market, which you hear they're popular one moment, then you hear that they're causing suicide the next. Would you be interested in growing magic mushrooms if they were to become decriminalized in the state?
I would go and see. I don't know. I'd have to see what the numbers were. You know, I don't know how they would structure that, what the permitting would be like, there's a whole lot to it. I'd be interested to see how that all played out.
There's a lot of red tape around cannabis in the state. What's your thoughts on the state legislature mandating that cannabis growers and processors must have $2 million in capital and at least $500,000 in the bank to operate in West Virginia?
You know how it is. It's interesting, you know, to think that they do these sort of things to kind of keep a closed loop on the system, and it's not necessarily fair. But you also have to look at places like in Oklahoma, right? I think that's Oklahoma, where they have basically enabled everyone to produce, and it caused the market to essentially crash. So, you know, I mean, I do think that they need to, you know, serve as a market regulator to free market capitalism. I think that the state government should try its best to encourage the free market, but also to not allow any one player to become too big. And, that's the way that I think it should work.
Yeah, it's a barrier for people who want to get into agriculture to actually grow and process the stuff, but who don't have the money. I mean, it could dig a lot of people, especially in the southern part of the state, out of the poorhouse, where poverty, especially generational poverty, is huge.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's certain aspects like that, where you got to consider. I think where people are allowed to have their own plant is, it makes sense, you know. I mean, I can have a tomato plant in my yard. I can also choose to go buy tomatoes at the store. You know, that's the way it also should be, you know. So
yeah, if there weren't so many barriers to growing, processing, and selling cannabis in West Virginia, would you be interested in growing the medicinal herb on top of mushrooms?
No, not really. I like mushrooms. I'll stick with them. You know, I think that that's so competitive. You know, everybody wants to do that. You know, not everybody wants to grow mushrooms. So
yeah, I mean, there's a real niche for it here in West Virginia. And I remember a few years back when they decriminalized hemp, everybody was growing hemp for the seed, and it went bust. But you don't hear a lot about people growing it for the fiber. And that's a shame. We should be growing hemp for fiber. But I'm hearing that there's no places in West Virginia currently to process the hemp for cloth and concrete and all that good stuff. What sage business advice would you give to future agpreneurs to help them make their businesses more marketable and profitable?
I think be yourself, but show it. Figure out ways to bring people to the product by being yourself.
People can't currently buy your mushrooms in any grocery stores.
Check out General Steak and Seafood on the corner of Brooks and Coyer if you're in Charleston. And then check out our online website or JQ Dickinson Saltworks in Malden. We sell direct to consumers, so we'll have it shipped to your door as soon as we can.
Milton has a pumpkin festival. Buchanan has a strawberry festival. Any plans of having a mushroom festival in Charleston or Hernshaw or Marmette? Is that on the horizon?
Maybe in Paint Creek one of these days. That sounds like a good idea. Oh, man. Mushroom festival one of these days. That's for sure.
So are you leasing the tunnel, or are you buying it? Or
Yeah, I saw someone on Facebook said that Hirschhoff Farms is purchasing the Memorial Tunnel, and I was like, wow, that's how fake news spreads. And no, we're just leasing it with working with our friends at the National Guard and Patriot Gardens program. So it's sort of a collaborative project to see if it'll work, you know, and it's working pretty well.
So does the National Guard keep it up? Like if it were to crack or fall in or something like that? Or are you responsible for those repairs?
I don't think I am. Oh man, but it's I talked to the structural engineer the other day that looked at the tunnel a couple of years back, and he said everything was good. So I was reassured by that.
So are y'all utilizing the entire tunnel or just a portion of it?
Just a portion, just the front part. So the rest of it, they're working. There's still training exercises set up that I think they're working on removing, but I'm not sure.
If you're interested in purchasing Hirschhoff Farms gourmet mushrooms and grow kits, check out www.hirschhofffarms.com. I want to thank my special guest, George Patterson, for coming on the Mothman in the Bible Belt podcast and taking us on a magical mushroom journey. Hopefully, some of you listeners might be inspired to start up your own ag business venture after listening to this podcast episode. What do you have to lose? The USDA offers up several grants, cost share programs, and loans to help agripreneurs get started. For Mothman and the Bible Belt podcast outlet updates, guest bios, and direct links to social media, please check us out on the web at www.mothmaninthebiblebelt.com. Thanks for listening.